Welcome to the Republican Professor podcast. My name is Dr. Lucas J. Mather, and I'm happy to be here with you, and I'm glad that you're here with us again to go into part two with our very special guest, Senior Judge Anthony Ishii, who was appointed to the federal bench by President Bill Clinton. And so we have a Democrat judge. He was appointed to the U.S. District Court in Central California. And he heard a case on the Second Amendment back in 2014. And that case can be found in Sylvester versus Harris in 41 Federal Supplement, the third series, page 927, 2014. It's the District Court of Central California, I think. And it's about the 10-day waiting period for firearms transfers here in the state of California. There's a 10-day wait in the vast majority of circumstances for any firearm transfer. Well, I should say the vast majority of firearms transfers, even private party sales between neighbor and neighbor, or between an uncle and a nephew. So, and the 10-day wait applies to anyone regardless of your status. So if you're a gun owner and or you could be even a gun collector, where you already have a firearm, at least one, you still have to wait 10 days. Now, why is that? Even people who pass a background check have to wait 10 days. Even people who've not only passed a background check, but have been through state-mandated licensure training as a firearms instructor or as a concealed carry holder, vetted by the local sheriff, in what used to be kind of a invasive process and an arcane process to my lights, would have to wait 10 days. So that's what this case is about. Does that 10-day waiting period conflict with the Second Amendment? Does it conflict with the Constitution? Does that later statutory law in the state of California conflict with the Constitution? And if there is a conflict, then okay, what's the remedy? Because the judges are in the business of providing remedies for harms caused by the defendant to the plaintiff, redressable by the court. So I will refer you back to the first episode on this last time to get up to speed on the issues of standing, the constitutional Article 3 issue of standing, and more of the preliminary issues as far as evidence goes and the tactics that the Democrats used to try to get in all sorts of evidence that wasn't really evidence, just wasting the court's time, wasting everybody's time, hoping, praying for that Hail Mary to be caught on the fourth down in the fourth quarter with 1/4 of a second left. What I love about this judge, Judge Ishii, is that he gets the right answer. Now, it could be objected at this point that, Dr. Mather, what the hell do you know? What do you know about the right answer? Isn't that just your opinion? And it's the judge's job to find the right answer. You don't stand in judgment of the judge. Well, let's recall that. When you, first of all, let me, say something affirming here to that. Yes, the judge is uniquely situated as a trial court judge to hear deposition testimony, live testimony, sort through the proposals for evidence, judicial notice, things like that, to read the briefs, to he has that nice cushy federal salary and federal retirement to be able to have the time to read through the briefs and sort through his own thoughts on this, and then issue, remember, it's called an opinion. It is a judgment, but it's an opinion too. That's what it's called. And yes, we as citizens are supposed to read this stuff. That's why there's no copyright on this stuff. I don't know if you know that. This is disseminate this as far and wide as you want. That's the whole point. They want people to read this. Now, do people read it? No, but that's why we're doing what we're doing. It's for the public to read and to think about. That's the whole point. And it's not just for attorneys. I mean, yes, attorneys do need to think about in a careful way, predictability for their clients, and the clients themselves need to be able to understand this. It can't just be lawyers, reading and then regurgitating. There's something more involved here. After all, everybody gets an appeal. You're going to lose. Somebody's going to lose. That person gets an appeal. The whole idea of an appeal implies that the judge could get it wrong. But the whole idea of an appellate court affirming the judgment implies the judge could get it right. So the judge could get it wrong, could get it right. This is for the public to be widely disseminated, not that the public actually reads it. So this is fair game. In fact, this is the material that you really should be familiar with, at least to some degree on some issues. I picked the Second Amendment because I'm interested in it and I live in California. So I'm very interested anytime the state government takes itself to be doing the Lord's work, violating the Constitution. I'm going to have a problem with that. Now, how do I articulate that? That's the work we're doing here. And I'm not saying I have my mind made up ahead of time. I've read this carefully a long time ago, and I reread it this past Christmas. If you don't believe me, I've got the date that I printed it out. Actually, my mother-in-law printed it out for me. God bless her. So we're on page 9 of 38. In the Google Scholar edition, starting with Section 3, Second Amendment Challenge. Contentions. Here's the plaintiff's contentions. Plaintiffs argue that the 10-day waiting period interferes with the right to keep and bear arms, interferes with property rights, and causes additional expenses that may prevent a person from obtaining a firearm. Plaintiffs argue that there were no waiting period laws in existence, either in 1791 or in 1868, that waiting periods are not prevalent today and are not long-standing and presumptively lawful regulations. Let me just mention here that recall this is before Bruin in 2022. 2014 is before 2022. 2022, Bruin came down and clarified a lot of these issues. And actually, I think Ishii already has it clarified in a substantial way, not in every detail, but in a substantial way. Ishii gets the main thrust from Heller and McDonald that the Second Amendment shifts the burden from the plaintiff to the government and shifts the focus of that argument to history and tradition, specifically, as he mentioned, 1791 and 1868. And that presumptively lawful language comes out of Heller and McDonald because that's how you treat fundamental rights, fundamental individual rights. It would make no sense for fundamental individual rights to be fundamental individual rights if the government could just later make a statute expressing their worries and anxieties that had no regard for fundamental individual rights. Okay, so now, I mean, this got really bad during 2020 and 2021, 2020 especially, which we've covered in McDougal versus Ventura County back over Christmas. You want to take a look at those. I mean, when you have a 10-day waiting period and that firearm has to be delivered by a licensed vendor of the state, and you shut down the licensed vendor of the state, well, then that 10 days turns into 20 days, turns into 30, maybe turns into 60, as we saw with Ventura. Actually, it turned into at least 70 in that case, because of the way the calendar worked with those emergency orders. And that was crazy. That stuff was crazy. Plaintiffs argue it's unnecessary to determine whether intermediate or strict scrutiny applies because the waiting period laws will not pass intermediate scrutiny. Under intermediate scrutiny, the 10-day waiting period laws are justified as being necessary to do a background check and to provide a cooling off period. However, I needed a cooling off period just reading them. However, plaintiffs argue that they do not contend that they should be exempt from a background check. Rather, their challenge deals with timing. As for background checks, 10 days is an arbitrary figure. We've seen that before, 10 being arbitrary. Refer back to the episodes on the magazine limit capacity to 10 in the state of California. We did that, I think, last December, last November. Check that out. Four-part series on that one. 10 days is an arbitrary figure. For 20% of all applicants, the background check is approved and completed in about 1 hour. Well, that makes perfect sense to me. Doesn't that make sense to you? Background checks are required by federal law. It's a federal form you fill out when you go to a retailer and buy a new gun in all 50 states. The ATF manages that, the American Federation of Teachers, LOL. That would be scary. In most states, you walk out the same day with the firearm. That means the background check had to be completed in that time. So even in California, there's nothing magically that takes longer in California than Arizona. So for those who already own a firearm and are known to be trustworthy, I don't like that language. That's Democrat language. Known to be trustworthy. Can you imagine applying that to like the First Amendment? You have a right to go to church because, you're known to be trustworthy. Well, you have a right to go to church whether you're trustworthy or not. In fact, that might be a reason for you to go to church. I don't like that language. but I'm going to use his language, okay? For those who already own a gun, a firearm, and are known to be trustworthy, makes me cringe, due to the licenses that they hold and a history of responsible gun ownership, there is no justification for imposing the full 10-day waiting period. With respect to cooling off periods, plaintiffs aver that for those individuals who already possess a firearm, the waiting period will not prevent impulsive acts of violence because the individual already has a firearm. As to concerns about whether a person may become prohibited from possessing a firearm after the firearm has been delivered, California has implemented a two safety net systems, the APPS and Wrapback. These programs undercut the need to impose a full 10-day waiting period. Now, remember, the judge is just going through and reviewing the plaintiff's contentions. So this, if it sounds great, it's because the plaintiffs are the ones that want the Second Amendment enforced against the state. So that's that perspective here. Plaintiffs propose that the court should order modification of the background check system and waiting period laws as follows. Any person for whom defendant can determine A has a valid and current CCW license, that person should be subject to the same background check as the 18 statutory exemptions to the 10-day waiting period and should not be subject to the 10-day waiting period. B, any person who has a valid and current certificate of eligibility, remember that's the 1 year background check, it's an administrative certificate that says you are good for 1 year, your background check. And magically, when we put that information on this piece of paper with the attorney general's signature, it's good for 1 year magically. Any other background check is only good for like that 1 second. And if you think I'm kidding, you have no idea what we deal with here in California. Let me just tell you, I'm going to tell you a story. You want to hear a story? I'll tell you a story. I'm not going to tell you the name of the town I was in, but I was in a town in California, a rural town in farm country. It's where a lot of farmers are. And so I was meeting somebody there to do a private party transfer of a historically interesting firearm for people that are academics like me who study like the history of concealed carry and the Second Amendment. And while I was in the store, this is a number of years ago, several years ago, while I was in that store I'd never been in, there was a used item that was similar but much older and in pretty good condition, and it was being sold on consignment. I had just finished doing the dealer record of sale for the first item, and I had my paperwork to come back in 10 days. Oh, joy. And make the trip back. And it was not in my neighborhood. It was a hike, you know. It was not convenient, put it that way. Well, I said, can I add this to my background check that I just did? He said, no, you have to do a brand new background check. You have to pay the fee again, and you get. So that's what I mean is it was I'm saying it was possibly seconds that I saw the other one I mean, a matter of seconds. Like, could have been 20 seconds. Could have been 15 seconds. And I'm like, oh, hold on, let me check that one out too. And maybe I'll add that one and just, come back the same. And he's like, no, that's, you would have to repay the fee and do another background check. What sense does that make? I just did one and it was 20 seconds ago. And so why wouldn't that be included in this one? Well, it's just because of the way the system is set up. It's not, has nothing to do with common sense. For a bureaucrat, it makes all the sense in the world because they're all about bean counting and number crunching, and it makes a hell of a lot of sense to them because they get to collect another fee. Now, had I been on the ball and I looked around the store and I saw that one, and I made a decision, oh, I want both at the same time, then I could have done one background check on both at the same time. But since it was 20 seconds later, you have to do another one. So that's what I mean is the COE thing, certificate of eligibility, it's issued by the Attorney General. He has it on his letterhead and he signs it. And so it's now a matter, it's magical that that background check lasts for a year. Amazing how that works. Magic. I think he sprinkles like DOJ dust on it, pixie dust, and says, you are not a criminal now for a year. And whereas ordinarily, every single second, you have to get a new one. So, any person who has a valid and current COE, certificate of eligibility, and for whom the AFS system shows a firearm purchase since 1996, that person is subject to the same background check as the 18 statutory exceptions to the 10-day waiting period and should not be subject to the 10-day waiting period. Makes sense to me. Jeez. And C, any person who has purchased a firearm and is documented in the AFS system since 1996, that person may take delivery of a firearm upon approval of a background check. I'm done with the plaintiff's contentions. This whole thing was designed to get at the arbitrariness of and the capriciousness of the 10-day waiting period, not the background check per se, but the 10-day wait. It's 10 days, and actually, it could be longer than that, it could be up to 30 days. Defendant's contentions. Now, I want you to pay attention. The defendant is the state of California. Defendant argues that the 10-day waiting period does not burden the Second Amendment. Tell me how you really feel. Wow. Defendant argues that the 10-day waiting period does not burden the Second Amendment. Fascinating. What would that mean? Go back to what we talked about as far as Article 3 standing yesterday. Do you recall this? What's the three elements of standing in a federal court for a case like this? The plaintiff has to have suffered harm caused by the defendant, redressable by the court. The defendant comes right out of the gate here, the government, and says, we didn't do anybody any harm. See, that's how the Democrats think. They think, yeah, we can arbitrarily restrict your access to firearms. No problem. That doesn't harm you. Well, if there's no harm, then why would you have standing? And if a judge is a Democrat, and that's how they think, then they would just toss the case for lack of standing. You see how this works? You see why it's important to have the Republican point of view? Because it's Republicans that are saying, hold up, yo, hold up. You do have standing. There's a harm here. Yes, it burdens the Second Amendment. Hello, hello. None. Going back to the defendant's contentions on page 9, none of the organizational plaintiffs have attempted to purchase a firearm. And both plaintiffs, Jeff Sylvester and Brandon Combs, have possessed a firearm at all relevant times. The increased cost or minor inconvenience of having to make a trip, return trips to a gun store, are de minimis. Defendant also argues that the 10-day waiting period falls under one of the long-standing regulatory measures identified by the Supreme Court. The 10-day waiting period is a condition or qualification on the commercial sale of a firearm. As a long-standing and presumptively lawful regulation, remember, this is the defendant's contention, the 10-day waiting period does not burden the Second Amendment. Okay. Defendant also argues that in 1791 and 1868, the nature of production of firearms, where firearms were sold in relation to where people lived, and the relative expense of firearms made obtaining a firearm within 10 days of deciding to purchase one nearly impossible. As a result, the people of 1791 and 1868 would have accepted a 10-day waiting period before obtaining a firearm. Defendant argues that if the Second Amendment is burdened, the 10-day waiting period's burden is not so severe. This is where it's getting into balancing, which was excluded. I think it was there in Heller. It was also there in McDonald, but it's double and triple there in Bruin, getting rid of the balancing test. Defendant argued that if it does burden the Second Amendment, then that 10-day waiting period's burden is not so severe as to justify strict scrutiny. Under intermediate scrutiny, we can do whatever the hell we are. Sorry, the 10-day waiting period laws are constitutional. The waiting period laws serve the important interests of public safety and keeping prohibited persons from obtaining firearms. Let's say a word about our adversarial system here. The defendant is on the side of the government. Don't ever forget that. The government is on its own side. When they talk about public safety, they don't have any individual in mind when they say public safety. There's no duty for the police to protect any individual. That's been litigated. It's established law. It's gone all the way to the Supreme Court. That's the law of the land right now. Well, then when they say public safety, you take all those individuals and spread them out like peanut butter, and it's just a blob called public safety. But any number of deaths is perfectly consistent with public safety in their minds. If they're deaths that are caused by the state preventing people from protecting themselves absent the non-bodyguard police who are supposed to be protecting public safety, but who do not protect, have a duty to protect any particular individual at any given time. The police are not bodyguards. So if you have a theory that you can level up and get training and be your own first responder, and you develop the confidence and competence in that, and that's a moral foundation for exercising your legal right to be your own first responder, then that right would be delayed. And if you get attacked during that time, the state is saying that's called public safety. Now you're being attacked. It doesn't even faze them. That's it's you don't understand. It's public safety. They're worried about keeping prohibited persons from obtaining firearms. Notice it doesn't say anything about the other side of that coin, which is preventing lawful people from obtaining firearms for their own protection as a part of public safety. Now, why doesn't that count as public safety? Why is that not that side of the coin not equally advocated for on the part of the government who loves you so much? You got to think like an adversarial thing. It's sad, but that's the human nature, right? I mean, it's the same thing when you're paying your taxes. It takes people a long time to see this. I mean, I started paying taxes when I was 18. I was in the military. I was shocked that I had to fill out something to the government and send it in. I was like shocked, but then I got money back because I was just enlisted. So, I was like, oh, okay, well, it's another check. And I was thinking about it wrong. Well, when your taxes get a little bit more complicated, if you have your own business, sometimes you get the sense that the IRS doesn't even understand what the hell it's asking or saying. I mean, it's the IRS is on the IRS's side in an adversarial relationship. So it's not exactly like you go to the grocery store and you pick out the milk and it says $3.99 and you're like, oh, all right, well, I mean, even that is kind of an adversarial relationship in a way. I mean, you study contracts like offer and acceptance and consideration. Really, what's happening there in the common law is the foundation is common law, grocery store pricing. The grocery store is offering that to you. It's an offer. The price is an offer. Your acceptance of it is you're picking it up after seeing the price. And your consideration would be to pay that price. And that's your consideration to them. And then their consideration to you is you get the milk or whatever it is, right? But in the case, that's the reason I'm describing it that way is I had a great business law professor, Bert Chang, in Hawaii when I was studying business law at Wayland Baptist University in Aiea, Hawaii. I love Bert Chang. He also taught my business ethics class. He was an attorney. I just loved how he took everyday examples and he uncovered the issue of contract and adversarial relationship. Doesn't always have to be a dispute, but it's just one, there's one side and there's another side. Like, okay, go back to the pricing issue in the grocery store. You have a damaged carton of milk, and maybe it's a reduced price with a sticker that's reduced. Maybe. If the manager is all over it, then that's probably already taken care of, and there's a reduction offer. Well, you might take that same, you might take a, you might find a damaged carton or something like that, and it's not reduced. But you could still go to the manager and say, hey, this is damaged. Would you take a dollar for it? And the managers have discretion to say, yeah, we're going to toss that thing anyway. I'll take a dollar for it. Yeah. And there's offer, acceptance, consideration happening. It's all the elements of a contract. And that is completed and the sale's complete. And then you walk out. Now, it's called stealing if you walk out without that, if you do it on purpose. The manager or somebody's supposed to confront you in that situation. Back in the day, that's what happened. I don't know about now. Probably people are so worried about getting sued. At least the businesses are. I think it's kind of sad. I think that people should be confronted. It could be a mistake, and maybe they want to pay for it, or maybe they didn't want it. In the case that they really are stealing it, then yeah, I think they should be confronted. And that's when the manager or the representative of the business or the store says, our offer for that was not free. And so we'll need consideration from that. And if you want to talk about the price, we can, but price was posted over there. So going back to the defendant, I mean, the defendant is on the side of the government. They're not on your side. So when they say important interests of public safety, and the Democrat naively puts themselves in that and says, oh, okay, well, they're on my side. Well, that's just naive. And maybe it's because you don't have the interest or confidence to feel like you can be your first responder and therefore nobody else should be able to. Well, that just doesn't follow. That's just bad reasoning. The 10-day waiting period, this is the defendant contention, reasonably fits these interests in three ways, according to the defendant. First, it provides sufficient time for the Department of Justice to perform a background check. That would be the California Department of Justice in Sacramento. The nature of the database utilized often require analysts to seek out information and dispositions from other agencies, entities, and states, which can be extremely time-consuming. Further, sometimes prohibiting information is entered into a system after the initial check. Without the 10-day waiting period, there could be an incomplete check and prohibited individuals could obtain firearms. Relying on a CCW license or a COE is not a substitute for the background check because new prohibiting events may have arisen after a person obtains the CCW license or the COE. Second, it provides a cooling off period so that individuals will have time to rethink committing impulsive acts of violence. Suicide is often based on transient thoughts. Studies show that waiting periods limit a person's access to firearms. To prevent suicide, you'd have to do more than limit. In this way. So if you grant that preventing suicide is an important interest, as important as the state is claiming, well, the only thing that would really follow from that is you prevent people from having a firearm, right? At any time. Not just for 10 days. Suicide is often based on transient thoughts. Again, remember, not, there's nothing in here about self-defense at all. They're not even considering that, the defendant. That's not even a part of any part of how they look at their job. It's like, thanks a lot. Thank God for Republicans. They're Republican. We're like, excuse me. Excuse me. You heard of self-defense? You heard that? That's innocent conduct. That's not criminal. And that's not suicidal ideation either. In fact, that's wanting to stay alive. The opposite of suicidal ideation. What about that? You're so interested in keeping people alive. What about that? Second, it provides a cooling off period so the individuals will have time to rethink. Studies show that waiting periods often limit a person's access to firearms and allows time for the transient suicidal thoughts to pass. It's a strange diagnosis of suicide, I have to say. They're just fleeting, transient thoughts that sometimes occur to you. Oh, look, we caught it. It's 10 days. Even if a person has a firearm in the AFS system, there's no guarantee that the person still has the firearm. Further, a firearm may be in operable condition, or a person might not have any ammunition. For those individuals, a cooling off period could be beneficial. They may not have end ammunition. I'm trying to think. They may not have end ammunition. So if you don't have ammunition for the gun that you already have, help me understand this, California. You're saying even in the cases where the purchaser passed a background check and already has a gun anyway, they might not have ammunition for it. And so in their mind, it's easier to just go buy a new gun than to go get ammunition at Walmart, because back then you could get ammunition at Walmart for pretty cheap. For those individuals, a cooling off period could be beneficial. Notice the word could. Further, some guns are not suitable for some purposes, and a cooling off period for a newly purchased firearm is beneficial. Finally, the waiting period laws provide Department of Justice agents with additional time in which to investigate straw purchases. It is better to intercept a weapon before it is delivered to a purchaser. If the waiting period laws did not exist, law enforcement would have to perform more retrievals of firearms from straw purchasers. Therefore, the 10-day waiting period is a reasonable fit and constitutional. All right. Findings of fact, page 10. Let's push into this. We'll go a little bit further. I have a retirement ceremony I'm going to for my former chair. He's retiring after 29 years, and so I'm going to be there, and I got to leave here. I got to get ready, do a little bit of administration here before I go. So I'm going to not go quite as long as I normally go. Findings of fact. We'll just cover number one, and then we'll leave it there. There's a number of findings of fact. One, two, let's see here. Three. Lots of facts next time. Four, five, six, seven. We're going to have to spend some time on the findings of fact. Okay. Let's do impact of the 10-day waiting period. Unless a statutory exception applies, every person who wishes to purchase a firearm in California must wait at least 10 days. Notice it said at least. Not maximum, minimum. So when we say 10 days, we mean minimum, not maximum. Important. From the date of purchase before taking a possession of firearm. The 10-day waiting period affects a person's ability to defend themselves through the use of a newly purchased firearm. Thank you, Judge Ishii. Wow, that is so refreshing. Right there. Right there. Yeah, people exist, not just public safety. People, individuals exist as a part of the whole thing. The 10-day waiting period interferes with the exercise of dominion over property with respect to a newly purchased firearm. He's citing the trial testimony. Generally, the 10-day waiting period requires a firearm purchaser to make at least two trips to a firearm dealer in order to complete a firearm transaction. The multiple trips required to complete a transaction can cause disruption in work and personal schedules, extra fuel expense, and wear and tear on a car, depending on where a firearm or firearms dealer is located in relation to the purchaser. This can be a financial burden on a purchaser. I'm on page 11. The 10-day waiting period may also necessitate additional fees for the transfer of firearms between dealers. so that a person can purchase a firearm from a more distant dealer, but can retrieve the firearm from a closer dealer. Schedule conflict and dealer location may cause a person to miss the window to retrieve a firearm after the 10-day waiting period has expired. There is a window. That came into view of the court in the McDougal versus Ventura County case that we talked about. That's a huge issue. When you close a gun store and you miss the window, then, there was like a 20-day window to pick up the firearm. The additional transfer expenses, the impact on a purchaser's schedule, and or the location of a firearm may combine with the 10-day waiting period to cause a person to forgo purchasing a firearm. Plaintiffs Brandon Combs and Jeff Sylvester each currently possess a firearm and both intend to purchase a firearm in the future. Neither Combs nor Sylvester is prohibited from owning or possessing a firearm in California. Both Combs and Sylvester have foregone opportunities to purchase a firearm or have been unable to complete the purchase of a firearm due to the operation of the 10-day waiting period. Remember, these are just findings of fact. They're not the judgment. They're in his discretion, his judgment. These facts are established with testimony and are relevant. Okay. Now, the waiting period laws is the second category of finding a fact, and we're going to take a look at that when we come back next time. Thanks for joining me on the Republican Professor podcast. I've been your host, Dr. Lucas J. Mather. I also have a master's degree. My first name's Luke. So, like Dr. Phil, you could just call me Master Luke if you want. We'll see you next time.